You're listening to Sea Control, hosted by the Center for International Maritime Security. Aloha, shipmates, and welcome back aboard Sea Control. My guests today are Ulam Pawlak and Dr. Anthony Piankos. They published a report writing on behalf of the Casimir Pulaski Foundation entitled One Team, One Playground, Various Players, Maritime Security Approaches of European NATO Members. So Ulam, Anthony, thank you for coming on today. I'd like to start by asking each of you to introduce yourselves a little bit to our audience. So Ulam, would you like to start?
Yeah, for sure. Thanks, Jared, for having us. My name is Ulam Pawlak. I'm a research associate with the German Armed Forces University in Hamburg and the German Institute for Defense and Strategic Studies. It's the think tank of the German Bundeswehr.
Well, thank you very much. And then Anthony, how about you? Can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Yes, thank you very much for the invitation. It's a great pleasure. To shortly introduce myself, I have a few years think tank background, Polish think tanks, private ones. And now I'm working at the defense industry, Polish Armament Group, where I'm a member of the team responsible for delivering new frigates for Polish Navy. So it's quite connected with the subject we'll also probably discuss today. And in 2020, I finished my PhD thesis at Warsaw University, connected with NATO maritime dimension.
Well, thank you both again for coming on. As a reminder, the audience, all opinions are our own and not reflective of any institution with which we might be otherwise associated. So, Ulam, I'll start with you. Did you come up with a common definition for maritime security for this paper? And what was the definition that you settled on? Or what's your personal definition?
Yeah, important question. And I think as you pointing out with the question correctly, the term maritime security is a broad one. So if we remind us of the maritime security matrix by Christian Brügger, there are four directions of maritime security. National security, speak sea power, marine environment, economic development or blue economy, and human security. So in this report, we concentrate on the security aspect or the naval dimension and the maritime security approaches, as the analysis titles, are there with the state's approaches on how to gain or achieve their maritime security. We look briefly at their naval legacy and concentrate on the current strategic context, the maritime security interests, and the duties of the naval forces.
And Anthony, how did you define maritime security?
If I just may supplement what Ulam said, I think it's important to state that maritime security for me is a kind of process, not a state of affairs. So it's not given as a gift. You need to constantly take action to secure this process. But if you succeed, you can then secure the free flow of goods by the sea space, neutralize some threats for your infrastructure onshore and offshore, and pursue also some other national interests. So I think it's a very important part of securing the whole national security. But as I mentioned, it's very important to see as on this idea as a process, because like when we analyze, for example, these countries in our report, we see that some countries, for example, try to maybe not treat it as a kind of process you need to secure itself, but rather as a kind of gift from, for example, international organizations, and then your maritime security can obsolete. And I think that's the most important issues here. So that's a background to the discussion. Yeah.
Well, thank you. As a just note to the listener, we are recording this on 26 March. The Russian invasion of Ukraine is ongoing. So there's something that we don't touch on in the course of this discussion that's happened since then. That's the reason why. But your answer, Anthony, leads us right into our next question. And how and why did you choose to focus on Poland, Portugal, and Greece?
We choose them because the study is based on NATO's core, which is traditionally maritime in nature. The North Atlantic as its geographical focal point, which is also presented in the alliance's name, as we all know. But NATO's maritime domain is more than the North Atlantic. And because of that, the report is motivated by stressing the diverse landscape of NATO's maritime sphere by looking at the maritime footprint of some of the member states. So it was suitable to identify states with different approaches and from different geographical directions. Besides the three cases of France, Norway, and Germany, we choose Poland, which represents the group of Central and Eastern European member states at the Baltic and Black Sea, for instance, Greece as a case from the Mediterranean region, whilst Portugal is a maritime nation with a broad outreach, extensive coastlines and exclusive economic zones in the North Atlantic. So what those cases do is helping to underline the maritime plurality existing in NATO.
Well, let's start with Poland then. What is Poland's historical relationship with the sea and what are its current maritime interests?
Oh, well, it's a very important question. I think I'm from Poland and I can say that in Poland, beside that the maritime security is not the most important issue in the security discussions in Poland, but the question of connections with the sea, historical connection, the naval heritage of Poland, it's a hot subject in the, let's say, professional discussion regarding the security issues in Poland. From the very beginning of Polish statehood, we have a sea connection. We have a sea access, to be honest, most of the time, very broad one. Of course, mostly in the Baltic Sea, with just a short period in the, also with the Black Sea access, but it was a really broad one. But during the first Polish Republic, meaning from the very beginning of the statehood till the partition period in 18th-19th century, we had no clear and ambitious naval policy. To be honest, most of the powers in Poland were not concerned, let's say, with the naval policy, with building naval forces, or even conducting, let's say, more maritime policy, like conducting the commercial shipping or something like that. It might look strange because, for example, we have a really outstanding export of grain and wood for the shipbuilding industry in Western European countries. A lot of Polish peoples gain a huge fortune on this export, but still it was conducted not by Polish ships or even by companies or entities connected with Poland, but mostly from other countries like Netherlands or United Kingdom. That was changed between two world wars. Then the Second Polish Republic changed the view on the sea matters and start to conduct really sea-oriented policy connected with building a Gdynia seaport, buying some naval assets in Western countries. So it was a really short 20 years period, yes, but with really intensive naval policy. What was hardly ended by the Second World War and with the September 1939, with the withdrawing of most of Polish naval forces to United Kingdom, just at the beginning of the war, what was planned, to be honest, but what changed and influenced the discussions about naval forces still today, to be honest, in Poland, because still we have a lot of commentators in Poland which mention this case as an argument against the naval forces build-up. So it's that was a turning point in naval policy. And then we have a Cold War, which was even worse because we have no possibility to conduct independent policy also in the sea sphere. So that was the last point which built the situation when we don't have a naval policy, naval maritime approach, and also not a wide support of Polish peoples for building naval forces or even discussing it more broadly in the public domain. Yeah? So this is the one point. And the second very opposite is Polish maritime interest, where we have a very strong connections with the sea, growing each day, especially now in this case with Ukrainian war, when every European country talk about building energy independency from Russian oil and gas. And Poland started a few years ago with building a LNG terminal in Świnoujście in the western part of Poland. Also Baltic Pipe and many, many other investments, making Poland probably in the next year totally independent from Russian suppliers of natural gas. And the same, but in maybe not so intensive ways, the situation with the oil and Russian imported oil. And also offshore wind infrastructure. We in this year many decisions regarding building these wind offshore farms were made by Polish authorities. So in upcoming years we can see that almost 20% of power in Polish system will be supplied by the offshore wind farms if everything goes well. So we see that it's a very strange situation, let's say, in European context, that we have from one side we have very weak, maybe not weak, but the heritage connected with the sea is not a good one, and we don't have experience from the past with naval policy and the necessity of conducting it. And on the second, we are very, very strong dependent on the naval police, naval on the sea and on the maritime trade and so on. So it's a kind of very specific situation in the European context. I think no other country in Europe have such a complicated situation regarding the relations between the country and the sea.
Well, what's the governing document for modern Polish national security, and how does that document treat the maritime domain?
The main document is Poland's national security strategy from 2020. And the main conclusion we found or we took from it is, as Anthony just pointed out in the historic context, that the maritime domain as a whole is still marginalized in the Polish security discourse. So this document contains only two guidelines for assessing what interests Poland has in the maritime domain to boost the economic development of the country and to increase the diversification of oil and gas supply sources by expanding the imports and import capacities, and to build also new entry points to the Polish system. So a very economic standpoint. However, in the context of security, there's only one remark, of course, regarding Russia, and mentioning, for instance, abilities in the Baltic Sea region, its exercises, or also activities of hybrid nature. Importantly to note is that there are two documents from 2017 which point into two different directions. So you have, on the one hand, Poland's strategic concept for maritime security, so an explicit concept for the maritime domain, which explicitly is arguing on the relevance of the maritime domain for Poland and how to deal with it effectively. On the other, you have a specific defense concept of the Republic of Poland. And keeping in mind that both documents have been published in the same year, the defense concept only at one point mentions the Navy and the Baltic Sea in particular, stating that the Navy will also play a significant role by defending our coastline and denying enemy supremacy over the southern Baltic Sea. So this contrast exemplifies the difficult position for the Polish Navy in the current context. Yeah.
And what's the state of the modern Polish Navy?
Oh, it's a really long story, again, connected with this heritage we discussed earlier, because it's a current shape of Polish Navy is still strongly connected with the fact that the Polish Navy was a part of Warsaw Pact forces during the Cold War times. And the role of Polish Navy in this context was just auxiliary forces connected mainly with the amphibious operations, minesweeping, and auxiliary missions like rescue ones and so on. So the compositions of the forces was mainly the big amount of minesweepers, auxiliary vessels like reconnaissance, rescue, and so on, and just small forces of strike units like one destroyer or something like that, and few submarines. And it's still clearly visible, but of course we have some modernizations plans in for the Polish Navy. Two main programs in recent 20 years were to buy new mine hunters, really state-of-the-art mine hunters of magnetic steel, so really modern one. And the second one was to buy the naval strike missiles, onshore-based, but a big component, for sure very important from the defend of our territory point of view, so not other naval missions, of course, but from the perspective of our national security here in the eastern flank, it's for sure very important one. But still, that left our naval strike component with two Oliver Hazard Perry frigates, which need to be decommissioned in upcoming years, for sure. It's not a question, it's a necessity to decommission them in, let's say, 5 or in the worst case scenario, 10 years. And just one ex-Russian kilo submarine with the rest, the former Norwegian one, submarines decommissioned in this year. So very small component. The good information is that last year MOD decided to launch the project of acquiring new three frigates for Polish Navy, which will be, I think, really it entirely changed the situation in Polish Navy, but still we need to at least 8 years to acquire three of them and to put them on the service, and because it will be built in Poland, it's the first thing, and the second one is that it's Polish not have a big experience in such a shipbuilding program, so it will be a challenge for sure. And it's also a plan to buy some submarines. It's in the Polish Armed Forces modernization plan till 2035, but still it's a really remote perspective now, I think. And bearing in mind the situation in Ukraine, I think the priorities will be still again changing more at land forces and anti-air defense, anti-tank weapons, and so on. I think the frigates will be, it might be a last program in few years for the Polish Navy. Sorry, just one. It's another batch of mine hunters coming in next years, three of them. So total number of six. So yeah, that's the current situation of Polish Navy.
Well, as we see the news trickle out of the Black Sea, I mean, those mine hunters may be very important in the near future. Yeah, so I definitely don't want to ignore those.
And it's a specialization of Polish Navy, mine hunting. So I think it's an important input for NATO forces. So for sure it's
a good player. Let's shift over to Portugal. How's the Portuguese perspective different from the Polish one?
Yeah, what we have seen in the case of Poland is how the focus on the continental or land domain, of course, defined by an obvious threat on Poland's and NATO's eastern flank, makes this domain traditionally a more present and important one in Polish security and defense efforts. So the maritime domain is seen rather complementary, as Anthony pointed out. And Portugal, literally on the other side, is a different picture. So it is almost entirely surrounded by the sea with only one neighbor, Spain, leaving it far from any comparable threat or aggressor in its environment. And whilst Poland's direct sea access is limited to the Baltic, the Portuguese maritime areas, including its exclusive economic zone and the also continental shelf, are corresponding to 42 times its land territory. Its search and rescue zone of responsibility amounts to almost 6 million square kilometers. Hence, with such responsibility, of course, the perspective and interest in the maritime domain is different. The Portuguese Navy has to follow Portugal's commitment to its islands in the Atlantic, the Azores and Madeira, but also in supporting, for instance, humanitarian assistance and disaster relief operations, particularly in the Portuguese-speaking countries and community as its former colonies, for instance. Yet simultaneously, the Navy is committed to EU operations and also NATO's collective defense. So the Defesa de Portugal 2015 document states that the Navy should possess, for example, amphibious and submarine capabilities, and that two frigates simultaneously should participate in NATO operations as the standing NATO maritime groups. So in the end, the contrast of both approaches summarizes also the challenge for NATO to agree on the several member states' interests. And after all, whilst the Polish Navy can be described as seen with lesser relevance as the Polish land and air forces, the Portuguese Navy and the maritime domain at all is an important tool for the country. And if one would be able to rate the most relevant service of its armed forces.
So a follow-up question is, has Portugal been able to fulfill its own ambition there to have two frigates participating at all times in the standing NATO maritime groups? Or is it more a matter of they have one deployed and then one ready for any other commitments?
I know that they're frequently deploying into the standing NATO maritime groups. I'm not so sure if it's all the time two frigates actually. I don't know if Anthony knows, but at least they are frequently deploying vessels there. That's for sure.
I just can add that I'm pretty sure that it's not two at once. I've 2 years ago I conducted a study about participation of European naval forces in standing NATO maritime groups, and Portugal was one of the most active countries in these formations. So I think that's the clear sign of also the Portugal maritime ambitions, especially that they are not really concerned about the eastern flank or Mediterranean situation, which are the main focus of the standing NATO maritime groups in the recent years. So it's also the sign of remote ambitions of Portugal, I think.
Then we'll shift to Greece. How is Greece balancing its own maritime ambitions, NATO commitments, and then ongoing tension with another NATO member, Turkey?
Well, so it's one of most interesting cases, I think, in NATO. It's the frictions between Turkey and Greece. And I think, firstly, we should emphasize that NATO is one of the main factors stabilizing the relations between these two countries. With a really quite long history of doing that, of the very beginning of membership of these two countries in NATO. So NATO is quite experienced in this matter. But it's also clearly visible that both countries try to use their relations with NATO countries, specific NATO countries, to leveraging the situation on this dispute between them. Like, for example, France support for Greece, or also, of course, the United States with the very changing situation regarding the relations between Turkey and United States, and Greece also trying to take advantage of these frictions. So I think what is really important looking at this matter is that we can, I think, raise the thesis that the main task of Greece naval forces in the peacetime is securing the territory integrity, what is pretty obvious, but it's not maybe so obvious for other European countries, NATO countries, that it's the main concern of the Greece naval forces is to have still an active presence in these dispute waters between Greece and Turkey. So that's, I think, the main driver of Greece naval forces modernization. So it's what is also not so obvious for other European countries, because it's not the participation, for example, in NATO maritime groups or connected forces of Western countries, but I think the main driver is these disputes with Turkey. What is also interesting, I think, that both countries during the many years are acquiring pretty the same even naval assets, like German submarines of the same type or frigates, what clearly indicates us that they might have the same view on this dispute, that that's the main driver of the naval forces modernizations, because they are acquiring the same assets to compete. So, but from the other hand, you have also a really strong Greece naval assets participation in these standing NATO maritime groups. Of course, mainly when they were conducting operation in the Western Mediterranean and in the Black Sea. So it's more regional context, not, for example, we don't have any Greece frigates in standing NATO Maritime Group 1 in Baltic Sea, but still a big footprint, mainly, of course, connected with the migration crisis in the Aegean Sea, of course, and other illegal activities in the Aegean Sea and Eastern Mediterranean. And what to sum up, maybe looking at all of these issues, so NATO membership, disputes with Turkey, and migration crisis, all these challenges which Greece is facing, we can see that Greece have really, I think, a big potential of naval forces, especially relatively with connection with the economic power and with the population and so on. So it's one, I think, important remark. The second one is that Greece has also a biggest fleet of merchant fleet, yes, in the raising the Greece flag all over the world. But still, we can clearly see that the maritime interests of Greece are mainly regional oriented. So it's, I think, a very interesting case when we have a really global footprint of your merchant vessels all over the world, and still your naval assets are mainly in your close to your seashores and very regional oriented. So it's, I think, also the interesting case. And that's one of the reasons why we choose Greece also in this report as example.
What overlap do you see between the strategic documents for these different countries?
Oh, that's, of course, we have 25 NATO members with sea access, or even 26. So, of course, the sea interests of all of them are very diverse. But we can, I think, in these cases which we analyzed, we can see the one main point which is highlighted in all the national documents of all of these countries and is clearly visible in their operations is NATO. It's maybe may sound trivial, but it's, I think, it's a very important matter that it's the, I think, the only one thing connected all these countries. That's why the NATO 360 degrees approach is so important, because we have really different interests. But of course, we can see some group of countries connected with some regions or some threats, like, for example, eastern flank countries like Poland, Baltic states, Romania, very regional oriented on the securing the eastern flank with not navy as a main priority, but mostly concerned with denying to conducting the operation by Russian forces in the Baltic and Black Sea. The second group is the countries mainly concerned about the situation in the Mediterranean, some illegal activities there, like Spain, Italy, or Greece, as I think, really good example of this group of countries. The third one we can see, I think, it's like Portugal, the countries mainly concerned with the security of sea line of communication, not only in the seas around Europe, but also in more remote regions like Persian Gulf or Arabian Sea and so on, like Portugal, Netherlands, Denmark, I think, maybe some specifics, of course, in each case. But so we can see some group of countries with some similar interests, but I think the main issue connected all of them is NATO, and it's a good information and a good sign that all of the countries see this clearly as one of the main connecting thing. So, Julian, maybe you would like to add something.
Yeah, if I would only add, like, this issue of overlap represents, as mentioned in the beginning, this core somehow of not only of the study but of yeah, again, NATO's nature, the plurality of interests and of approaches, which is yet bound within this one alliance. And to accept that some member states have other interests, concerns, or fears that oneself, but keeping in mind that this overlap can be found in the strategic interests. So, of course, in the maritime domain, as good order at sea and free and secure sea lines of communication, but also in general, in peace, prosperity, democratic values also, and that in the end, as NATO says, one nation would stand for all and all for one.
Well, thank you. And one final question, Julian, I believe this will probably go to you, but I told you both prior to recording, we'd largely skip over France and Germany. It's not that I don't care about either of those countries. I mean, I spent 3 years sailing around with the Germans as an exchange officer and another 2 years teaching at the Führungsakademie in Hamburg. So I care quite a bit about Germany, but we've discussed them both pretty extensively to date on the podcast. But I did want to ask the literal 100 billion euro question for Germany, with a massive uptick in defense spending on the table, dependent, of course, on Bundestag approval. What percentage of that do you see going to the German Navy, and what would the Navy want to do with it? Or what are you hearing that the Navy might want to do with it?
Yeah, very, very interesting and timely question. Yeah, as you know, since NATO's 2% target was established in 2006 and confirmed in 2014, Germany was all the time reliable in not achieving the target over the years. And its defense budget is currently somewhere between 1.4 and 1.5 GDP. So this special fund, however, is intended mostly to deal with urgent and concrete issues and will not really help to achieve the 2% target over the years or decades. And the Navy actually profited last year in 2021, actually a lot from the then made procurement decisions. For example, the decision to buy two 212 CD submarines or to acquire the P-8 Poseidon maritime patrol aircraft to bridge the time until the Franco-German MORS, maritime airborne weapons system, will be finished. And therewith, at the moment, it's critical to assess if the German Navy will actually profit a lot from this special fund with the invasion of Ukraine. Accordingly, the focus lies predominantly on land and air forces in the discourse or debate to support territorial and collective defense. And in addition, Germany will lead NATO's YGTF, the Very High Readiness Joint Task Force, next year and should be equipped properly. So the Navy actually, as you ask in your question, could make usage of some additional vessels, though there is the option of adding two more planned F-126 frigates to the fleet or buying even more P-8 Poseidon. But yeah, again, this would represent long-term processes. And yesterday, actually, the chief of German Navy, Vice Admiral Karg, said in an interview that he told the defense minister he has seven priorities for the Navy. The first three are ammunition, and the second three are spare parts, and communication devices. So you see, such proposal can be fulfilled rather quickly compared to the acquisition of new vessels, and it's even more realistic than the wish list of large procurement, new vessels, etc. So it is still interesting because there's no final decision made public yet. So it remains to be seen how the money will be spent eventually.
Well, thank you for the comprehensive answer. Yeah, I had no great expectation that we would see a sudden influx of vessels into the German Navy. The vessel procurement, it's as fun as it sounds like, it's normally like a decade long process. So if we were talking about a 3-year time window to get through $100 billion, you know, you could procure some long lead time items that you use to build later, but I don't see how you would use the. You can't go from a standing start to a vessel within 3 years, I don't think. I mean, I guess you could. There's a pretty massive shipbuilding industry, but that's, you're talking about retooling it and having it do other things than what it's currently doing.
True. And maybe just to add, you also need the personnel and to train the personnel. And you know already yeah, you're looking for a personal at the moment as well. So yeah, that would be the next thing. But yeah, we'll see.
Well, that is unfortunately all that we have time for. I'd like to thank my guests, Julian Pavlak and Dr. Anthony Pienkos. Julian, where can we find you online and what are you working on next?
You can find me on Twitter via upavlak. And what I'm working on, I think the last time I've been guest here at C-Control, I stated that my main project is my PhD research, and it still is. So I still have some work to do. I'm looking at security strategies in Northern and Eastern Europe. And yeah, this continues to be my main task to be finished in the future.
And Anthony, where can we find you and what's your next project?
Okay, so I'm not very visible at social medias because of my now current professional position at the Polish Armament Group. But my main project now is to publish my PhD thesis. I think it's even more important to do it in from Polish perspective, bearing in mind the current situation of in Ukraine and Eastern flank, and maybe we should think about the second part of our report with Julian with some other countries, because we have still only 6 covered, so a lot of them ahead of us to discuss and build an even more broad view on European NATO countries in national maritime interest. Yes, so it's I think the second idea to elaborate.
Well, I look forward to your comprehensive report on the Swiss Navy in the Genf state. but thank you both again for coming on. To listeners, thank you for tuning in. We'll see you next time.
Thank you.
Thanks.